I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Not that long ago, the Capitals were the seventh best chanced team to win the Stanley Cup, according to the Vegas odds. Just like that, snap your fingers, we're a couple of games into the playoffs. They now have the best odds to win the Stanley Cup in their quest to go back-to-back. 5-1 favorites, Islanders 7-1, Flames 8-1 with the Blues. The Columbus Blue Jackets up 3-0 right now on Tampa Bay, 9-1. Let's get to our Beltway Blitz. What's going on in town you care the most about? Jam-packed couple of teams in one segment. We'll start you off on the gridiron. Craig Hoffman is our Redskins insider. Craig, no suspension for Reuben Foster. The Redskins look pretty good after taking a lot of heat for bringing in Reuben Foster.
I mean, yeah, ultimately, I think they probably come out of this looking as good as you can. I don't know whether the result justifies the process because we just don't know that much about the process, right? Like, we don't know what their investigation that they talked about entailed. We don't know anything about how they came to the conclusion that only they came to. No other team claimed Reuben Foster. It wasn't like they had to do this to get the player. Ultimately, they do it for the contract. In some ways, it's minutia. And obviously, the way they handled it after, I think, was universally panned. So that doesn't correct this. But ultimately, they do get the guy they want in the situation they want. They have said all along they don't believe that he should be suspended, and they ultimately get that. I think there's still some questions, both about this, like the punishment itself, why two game checks, like what was the league's reasoning there? We haven't been able to find that out yet. But I think the bigger, grander picture is this. When you talk to people around the Redskins about Reuben Foster, they say he still has a long way to go. This incident wasn't so much their issue. It's they know that there's some maturity questions with him about him being able to just do his job and show up for work every day that there are real concerns about. And so they have set up this entire program, which Bruce Allen laid out in this statement, of how to try to make him a successful human and thus a successful football player. And he's got to prove that day in and day out.
Craig Hoffman covers the Redskins here at 106.7 The Fan. How about the linebacking core and the draft plans? What changed?
I don't think much changed. Ultimately, like even if he's gone for 6 to 8 games, he's still your guy for the future. So I think that they probably looked at, okay, we need a linebacker to pair with Reuben Foster, not we need someone just in case Reuben Foster's not available to us, any more than they would be looking at that now of saying, like, okay, if he goes off the deep end or something weird happens and we have to cut him because he's just not able to hold up his end of the bargain, then at that point, we need a replacement. But ultimately, I think Sean Dion Hamilton is penciled in as the starter right now, Mason Foster being the backup for both Reuben Foster and Sean Dion. But they could stand to upgrade at that position. If a Devin White or a Devin Bush is available at 15, like those guys could be in play. If not, you probably roll into the season with Sean Dion Hamilton, Reuben Foster, Mason Foster, and Josh Harvey Clemens, Zach Vigil still floating around as guys that you look at that position as potential impact players.
Craig, the offseason workout program starts today, I believe. Give me a storyline from that.
Unfortunately, I don't have a lot for you because this is the portion that's not open to the media. This is, you know, basically what is happening is they can be in the classroom with coaches, but no coaches on the field. All field work is really just strength and conditioning work. So Chad Englehart and his staff, the training staff is out there with them, or I should say the sports training staff, not the medical training staff. The actual trainers are out there with them. So they're getting a lot of good work in. This is the time of year where everyone talks about how they're in the best shape of their life. And it's that season, if you will. And then coming up after the draft, once you have the draft picks in, you've had a rookie mini camp, that's when you get on the field with the coaches and really start implementing your scheme and trying to set a base for and foundation for training camp. But right now it's really just working out as a team as much as anything and then getting to know the guys. And on that level and the classroom stuff, it's important that a guy like Foster and some of these new guys, Landon Collins, get in there and really start to understand what being a Washington Redskin is all about through the Redskins' eyes.
We're going to get into this next hour, but there was a SI piece done ranking all 32 position groups in the NFL at wide receiver, and the Redskins came in 31st ahead of only the Ravens, who barely count. I want to be real quick here, but just get your thoughts on that.
I'd have to do more research on the other ones, but I'm by no means surprised. Maybe there's some nitpicking you could do about 30 and 29, but it's a bad position group. I mean, it's probably their worst on the team, and it's weird because you feel like you know who the three top players are pretty definitively, and you just feel like you could upgrade at all of them. I mean, I like Trey Quinn and all, but you don't really know what he is as a second-round guy who didn't, or a second-year guy who didn't play a whole lot last year, and he was the last pick in the draft. Doxon, we know what he is at this point, which is a guy who can make the occasional play down the field but hasn't shown the ability to do much else. And Paul Richardson, like, is he even, like, as fast as he is he even the DeSean Jackson-like speed guy? And then they have no depth beyond that. So, yeah, it's a bad position group.
Yeah, it's not well thought of. His name is Trey McBride in the breakdown on SI. Craig, appreciate the time, buddy.
Jeez. See ya. Bye. At least you guys got my name right.
I know. Thanks, dude. Let's talk hockey, please, Tom. Chris Russell's the insider for these Washington Capitals, up 2-0. A little bit of a line shuffle, though, it sounds like, before tonight's puck drop. Russell, what do you got for us?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously down in Raleigh, it looks like, and Todd had told us this, I think, Saturday after the game, and again yesterday before the team left for Raleigh, that Carl Hagelin would stay down on the third line and Jacob Vrana would be moved back up to the second line. So that's certainly, you know, something to start. You guys were talking with Joe B about Jacob Vrana needing to step up. Clearly, I think he's one guy that absolutely needs to be Jacob Vrana at times during last year's Stanley Cup playoff run. So certainly that is something to be said. I think Evgeny Kuznetsov still got another gear. I know he had a great assist to set up Brooks Orpik on the game-winning goal. I understand he had a great assist in game one to set up a power play goal. I still think he has another gear. He's done a good job for the most part defensively against Aho, and that's really been an underrated key in this particular series, in my opinion.
Trey McBride is a Redskins wide receiver, by the way. He went to William & Mary, played for the Jets at one point.
He's an actual person.
So actually, pull it up. I'm curious now. Are they calling Trey Quinn Trey McBride, or did he actually get name-checked in their wide receiver breakdown? Russell, game three in Carolina, series shifting. What kind of environment are we expecting? For years, that's been an easy building to play in. I'm guessing first playoff game in 10 years, that won't be the case.
Yeah, it won't be. And I would kind of like, you know, I would kind of compare it, not what Nassau Coliseum is for the Islanders, but it's going to be that type of environment. It's a, you know, college-y sports town, and they do tailgate there all day, and they get liquored up and loaded up, and they'll be ready to scream and shout and create an environment that the Capitals are just going to have to be poised from. Boys, you know, they've gotten off to these quick starts in games one and two and then had to hang on for dear life. Well, clearly, you'd love that tonight to kind of take the crowd out of it a little bit. But more importantly, what you can't have is being down 2-0 or being down 3-0, because that's probably a mountain you're not going to climb.
Russell, two questions for you quickly here. Carolina seems to have made an adjustment on their penalty kill. What do the Caps do to kind of get going again? And part two is, how do you think Daenerys Targaryen will react to the news that she is, in fact, the niece of Jon Snow?
Yeah, I have no idea who any of those clowns are in the last question. But I think they gave the Capitals so much space on the first two power play opportunities of the series, the Caps cashed in. The Caps have not gotten a shot on goal in three power plays since then, three entire power plays, and wasted away basically a 4+ minute major penalty on Saturday. Kind of an underrated theme, if you will, of these first two games. They are going to have to crash the net hard, Tom Daley style. They are going to have to forecheck their butt off. Like I keep saying, they are going to have to win puck battles behind Peter Mrazek and behind the goal line in order to generate more opportunities. And stop missing the net. Stop missing the net.
That would be nice. Slashy, thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Willis.
That is your Beltway Blitz. We're Grant and Danny next. Tiger Woods won the Masters. And later this hour, the Redskins wide receiver position is currently broken. How do they fix it? You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny 1067 The Fan. 27 minutes from now, your chance to win tickets to see the Nats and the Giants 2 days from now at Nationals Park. Make sure you're listening at 12:45. Tiger Woods won the Masters yesterday. It was one of those stories that everyone, as of, I think, late Saturday night, understood was a possibility. Sunday morning, you wake up and you think, Tiger Woods is playing in the final group at the Masters, has a chance to win this thing. That's kind of cool. I think there was only Brooks Koepka and company behind him, but he's chasing the leaders, teeing off one of the last couple mm-hmm. of people to hit their golf ball on Sunday. That in and of itself was a story, and as the day went on, it became very obvious. Not only did he have a chance, but it was a legitimate, real chance. And then, wow, if something crazy doesn't happen with four holes left, he's going to win the freaking Masters at 43 years old, 11 years after he last won a major. And it just started to dominate the sports landscape. It's all anybody was talking about online. Every network in the country was checking in on him as often as they could. He was getting name-checked and mentioned during Major League Baseball broadcasts and NHL playoff games.
Yeah, people care.
It was nuts.
So I was living my life doing a bunch of different things. You know, the shuttle service that I run for my kid on the weekend, basically, where we're going from one practice to another and had a whole meal of food with some friends. The text started Saturday night, you know, where like, hey, this might happen. It's threefold. One, informative. Two, trolling me because knowing that I don't care at all and just want it to go away forever and want no one to talk about it at any point in time.
I texted you not to troll you.
No, it was.
But I just said, just an FYI, you probably are coaching some youth sporting event.
Which
right
I was,
now.
Yeah.
I said, I just want you to know Tiger Woods is tied for the lead at the Masters and this could go down as a really bad day for you. And you're like, thank you. And then about an hour and a half later, I texted you again and I said, I'm not joking. He's going.
This
to
is
going to
happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is again. You were not trolling, but there are trolls. But I have friends that like the golf and think it's legitimate, and were texting me like this is the best ever. And then now I'm on a chain with a bunch of guys that are just so thrilled that Tiger like hit an iron straight that time. And you know they're like Bickle in the sense that they while Tiger's withdrawing from tournaments after 5 minutes and you know. Bickle talked himself into this for years, and the fact that it finally happened for him, like, it's amazing. He willed it into existence.
But you have to admit this is incredible, right?
Of course it is. Of course, I mean, he went from not winning for a decade to he won the most prestigious event that they got.
He won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he won their biggest thing.
It is nuts. I don't think we've seen anything like it in sports. If you guys can think of a better comeback story than this, I'd be curious to hear it at 800-636-1067. This was Tiger Woods talking about the fact that now, there was a point where he had kind of given up hope that a day like this would ever happen again.
I had, you know, serious doubts after, you know, what transpired a couple of years ago. I could barely walk. I couldn't sit. Couldn't lay down. I really couldn't do much of anything. Luckily, I had the procedure on my back, which gave me a chance at, you know, having a normal life. But then all of a sudden, I realized I could actually swing a golf club again. And I felt if I could somehow piece this together that I still had the hands to do it.
I want to tell you about kind of me watching this mm-hmm. and give you my emotion as I'm watching it, and I want to see what you think.
Okay.
In no means is this me trying to like claim that I got a lot out of this. I was very casually observing this. You know, people like Valdez, he's got an Instagram video where he's legit like bawling in his wife is recording him. Like, this was their day. This is EB's day. But I did, strangely, I would not have bet this. I did feel more emotion than I ever would have thought, not in terms of being happy or sad or anything, mm-hmm. but just watching this, being glued to it, as a sports fan, this was as good as it got. The television was great. Watching his reaction when he had won, his primal scream, his Tiger roar, if you will. Seeing him run over and hug his son, and then CBS shows the video of 22 years ago when he's hugging his dad, straight into the video of him hugging his kid now. That hit me pretty hard. I felt real good for his family, for his mom, who's watched her kid go through so much. You know, the people basically he put through terrible things.
Yeah, right. His fault, I was going to say.
Amazing for his kids that they got to see their dad, who's been vilified correctly in cases, mm-hmm. that their dad, who's been made fun of him, become the butt of jokes, be on top of the world again. I was happy for him. Again, I don't think he's a particularly good guy. I don't know a whole lot about him other than what I've learned through the media, other than watching some of his tribulations and the worst moments of his life play out publicly. And I always say this, if all of our worst moments played out very publicly and were on camera, people would think a lot less of us and we'd be way less popular probably, and people would just not like us as much. And so he's lived his life publicly since he was a kid, going on late night shows and being a young teenager, as still an amateur at the time, getting into the Masters. I don't know why. I can't sit here and explain it, because I've never cared for one second about his comeback. I've never wanted to hear the next segment that EB was doing on Tiger. But yesterday, as he was coming down that 18th hole toward that green, I felt it. And that's what sports is to me. Does that surprise you at all?
No, because I remember other conversations we've had where you made fun of me because I get excited about the Summer Olympics. And then, like, a Summer Olympic event happens. You go, dude, I'm all in on fencing. Or I'm all in.
Never.
Big moments. No, it happened. We were watching it in the studio, and we're, like, excited about something.
I'm sure I cared about fencing guy.
Not the act of fencing, but this one American who's, like, got a chance to win a medal. You got into it, like everyone else does. Big moments, you can get excited about a big moment. That was a big moment. Just because I don't care, and just because I think he's a douche and don't root for him and want golf talk to go away forever, doesn't mean I can't acknowledge that something's big. People care about that. They're invested in that. And, you know, of course, Godspeed, but that doesn't surprise me.
Is it the best comeback story in sports, do you think?
It's always hard to quantify those things. I mean, Mario Lemieux came back from Hodgkin's lymphoma at cancer treatment, and his life was in the balance, and he came back and won a cup.
Yeah.
You know, and was great again, and he was the same guy.
Not 11 years after.
Not 11 years
year,
later.
I mean, the fact.
And yeah, I mean, but not self-inflicted either. So I mean, it's always, how do
well,
you quantify
those things?
Well, that's what's
tough with Tiger, yeah. Is you brought this on yourself.
Right.
And you had to come back from it. But it isn't just the personal life stuff. It's also, I mean, his back is fused together. It used to be he'd hit a couple shots in a tournament and have to go lay down for a while. Remember?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, when he first came back.
I remember hearing
that.
I
know
it.
You always joked that it was a bad shot and he was doing bad, so he was quitting.
You did those too.
That was probably a thing once or twice. But he legitimately, his back wouldn't allow him to play golf. My glutes weren't firing.
It wasn't going the way that I needed to go.
His glutes were firing on all cylinders this weekend, weren't they?
I suppose they were. But yeah, this to me is just the doomsday scenario for conversation. Because now you have to. You have to talk about it, right? It's a rule, and everyone's going to talk about it a lot.
Mike is in Pinefield. I have no idea where that is or what that means. What's up, Mike? How are you?
Just a field of pines.
Oh, Pinefield, just north of Waldorf in southern Maryland. But no, I thought in regards to something comparable to, you know, what Tiger just accomplished. The only thing I can think of is, you know, George, you know, for the boxing fans out there, you know, George Foreman coming back and winning the heavyweight title when he was 45 years old.
Oh,
almost
yes.
10, 12 years after he had his last, you know, when he held the belt.
Good one.
Other than that, I can't think of anything nowhere close to how far in between Tiger's Masters wins.
Was Foreman 45 when he won that?
He was mid-40s. I want to say 43
wow.
or 44.
Yeah, that's pretty good comp.
That'll do it, too.
It's just nobody gave him a chance to do this again. Nobody.
Except for the people that, honestly, were easy to make fun of.
Yes.
Like, he would hit one good shot at some pro-am somewhere, and they go, yeah, I'm telling you, if he puts it together, if he putts well, or his iron's in regulation. And, like, the sycophants who were so desperate for this, who looked so stupid for a decade.
Yeah.
They got it. They got their thing. They should have been walking around shucking and jiving yesterday.
Yesterday
nothing
was
nothing but montages of them, just finger-gunning people.
There is no doubt. You want to weigh in on Tiger's Masters win, you can. 800-636-1067, unlike anything that we have seen. The Redskins wide receiver group was ranked, Danny. You found this. 32 groups where they ranked was a little surprising.
Big number.
We'll get to that next on G&D here on The Fan. Hey, guys. Grant Paulson from my friends at Quip, the electric toothbrush that you need in your life. Going to make those teeth whiter, going to get that mouth cleaner, and you're going to have a cleaner counter and bathroom in the process because they've thought of everything. A lot of reasons to have a Quip. Sensitive sonic vibrations, gentle enough on your sensitive gums. Built-in two-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds, reminding you to switch sides, helping guide for that full even clean. Multi-use cover, mounting to your mirror, unmounting to slide over your bristles for on-the-go brushing, decluttering the sink, as I mentioned, because you don't have that crazy big clunky charger or wiring. Brush heads, automatically delivered, dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. I love Quip, so do 20,000 dental professionals. Quip starts at only $25 right now if you go to getquip.com getquip.com/grant. That's getquip.com/grant. They're going to give you a refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush if you go to getquip.com/grant.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Want to get into the Redskins wide receiver group being thought of as maybe the worst in the National Football League with you in just a couple of minutes. Ben Raby hosts Caps Pre and Post. He'll be on the show at 1 o'clock. Raby has work to do tonight as the Caps and the Canes are broadcasting right here on The Fan at 7 o'clock. So his evening begins at about 6:40, and he won't be done until well after the game with the post-game coverage here on the Capitals Radio Network. Kevin in Culpeper wants to hop in on Tiger winning the Masters. Pretty incredible television yesterday. What's going on, Kev?
Hey, guys. Yeah, just wanted to point out one thing I noticed about Tiger slightly becoming more personable, because I'm kind of with Danny. I've always thought he was basically a douche and always loved the talent, always had to watch it, even always rooted for him, even though I didn't like him. Don't know why that is about him, but find yourself in that position. Yesterday during the press conference after he won, one of the press guys asked a question, and he just answered no. And then he kind of smiled and said, would you like me to elaborate? And everybody laughed, and he kind of went into detail. Whereas 10 years ago, you know, an insightful question he's had with him. But he does seem to be a little bit more personable now than he used to be.
Couple things on that. Thank you for the call, Kevin. Number one, it's easy to play nice and to be friendly and to come off well after you just won the Masters, right? It's super easy in your introductory press conference to win the room, to own the moment. And I think similarly, winning is the easiest thing in the world to do. Everyone seems more likable when you just won a game, by and large. What about when you just had to miss the cut and now talk to the media? What about when you pull out of a tournament because your back's barking and you're 10 shots off the pace or whatever it is? So I'm not going to take a whole lot out of how he acted afterwards yesterday. I know a lot of people are. I'm happy for him because he had a great family moment. His daughter was there. His son was there. His girlfriend was there. His mom was there. That was cool to see. But I know a lot of people are saying how changed he is. I have to imagine that he is. How could you go through all of that and not be changed?
Not have it do something to you.
You have two kids growing up now that you're having to lead and show how to act like an adult and to be a decent human being. I think that changes you. But not only that, I mean, he's just been through so much. He was cocky. He was brash. He was a guy that didn't suffer fools and had no time for the media and wasn't interested in what anyone
had
to say.
Thought he was above it all, yeah.
He was the number one golfer on the planet. He was the number one athlete at one point on the planet. And then it all came crashing down, and that gives you perspective. I think he probably is different. I'm not going to use an anecdote from a press conference right after one of the best moments of his life to prove that, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't follow golf, but people that do, I listen to or will hear about it. And the people that really cover it, he's basically Shooter McGavin, right? When the cameras are on, when it's time, he can put the flash, the smile, and give you the, you got that right, buddy. But then off screen or, you know, behind the scenes, he's, you know, brusque and rude and dismissive and condescending and doesn't suffer fools in his mind. Doesn't have time for any of it, you know? And so, again, because the combo for me is pretty simple. I don't really care for him. I don't enjoy golf. It's pretty easy just to not deal with it, right? That doesn't come across
don't
my
engage.
Radar. Yeah,
wasn't
engage.
That easy yesterday at about 4 o'clock?
Yesterday was more challenging, certainly, when he's relevant. That makes it harder to ignore. But so I'm with you. I don't necessarily buy the, hey, post great moment, great story press conference, or you're in a good mood. So he hadn't been in a good mood all that often.
Yeah, I guess my way of saying it is I don't really buy in on this Tiger Woods as a brand new human being. I'm sure he's changed and he's more likable and just generally more decent and pleasant to be around than he used to be. I have to imagine that's the case. I don't know how he wouldn't be. know, you go from, I don't know that he was born on third base, but he got to third base really quickly as a kid,
right?
I mean, he is a golfer who's on, was it Johnny Carson at the time? One of the late night shows.
I'm a young golfer here, Tiger Woods.
He's like talking about chasing down Jack Nicklaus when he's 4 years old. Next thing you know, you're in the Masters and winning it before you're an adult. I mean, he's 1997, he's winning the Masters. You know how you get real cocky? You get super famous, you have all the money, and everyone in the world loves you, and no one tells you no.
Yeah, you're like 80% of the way to Jack Nicklaus's record by the time you're 30, whatever it is. That's how you get cocky.
Let's go to Joe in Manassas on Grant and Danny. How you doing, dude?
Hey, guys, love the show as always.
Appreciate
and I just wanted to say, add a little bit. I mean, he has been interviewed after he hasn't, you know, done well or been injured or missed a cut. And in the last year or two, if you're a golf fan and appreciate the game itself and appreciate Tiger, he has changed over the last year or two. He's been more humble. And I think that's the only way that he could be. But you can see it. If you watch golf and are an avid fan like me, you do see the change in Tiger. And it's more, you know, coming down to earth, more normal-like. And to be the reason that he was born on third base or whatever you say, the guy has super talent, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just can't – there's a reason. Is the talent overweighs it all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he earned a lot of it. Like, I think he was one of those guys. I know very little about it. But when you're that good at something at 4 years old, it doesn't happen on accident. I think his dad probably groomed him in a way that you see sometimes parents do with kids. And he took to it, but you have to have the natural talent.
Yeah, sometimes lightning strikes. You know what I mean? Every generation has a freak.
Yeah.
In whatever sport it is. And that was golf's.
He's one of the best – not golfers ever, athletes ever. Walter in Alexandria, welcome to Grant and Danny. How are you?
Yeah, good evening, sir. You know, I called you a radio station a couple years ago. The issue was Tiger Woods. I wish you'd have recorded my conversation. I said, Tiger Woods is having a hard time with golf today because he's playing against himself. And all the way, in order for Tiger to win, he's got to get himself together and play within himself. I see he has rehabbed himself. And he's now playing good golf, and that is a good thing. I'm just glad to see him win yesterday. And that's all I have to say about it, sir.
Thank you, Walter. Appreciate it. 12:30, good afternoon. Secondly, we do record everything. Podcasts are available at grantanddanny.com. You can check them out, radio.com as well. Great place to get all the recordings.
I don't know that we have the archived call that he wants when he said he wasn't competing against
anybody. I tell you what, to help our numbers out, go look for it. Go search and listen to 5-minute chunks of a whole bunch of different podcasts from different years and see if you can find Walter's call.
You could do that at thefandc.com or grantanddanny.com/audio. What's next, do you think? I know you don't care, but what's your best guess before we move along? Do you think this was a bright, shining star that just one last flash before it burns out, or do you think he's back now?
I mean, I am so untrained and unqualified to answer that question.
Well, we talk about a lot of things we're untrained about.
Fair enough. Good retort by you. I bet you he wins again.
You think so?
Yeah, I bet you it's a thing now because, again, it's a sport that allows for it, right? If this was, hey, he threw one last no-hitter with, you know, Crisco and Bardol and Vagisil on his person, his doctor on the ball, and he, you know, blew his arm out to do it, never again, right? But this is golf. You know, it's a recreational activity.
I don't know why I feel this way. And as you said, my opinion means nothing on this. But I feel like it was that one last epic moment, you know, the right way for it to all end.
Is that how it feels, like the sunset moment?
He gets to hug his kids in front of everyone. We have the video of him hugging his dad, him hugging his son. And that was kind of the end of the road. Now, I don't think he'll be irrelevant after this. I think he'll play a lot more golf and have it some top five finishes and be in the running a couple of times in majors. But my guess is within a few years, you know, some of the pain or issues come back. I can't see the next 5, 6, 7 years going like yesterday did and like all those years before it didn't matter. But I hope so because, look, it's great for golf and it's great for sports, I think, in general. It's great for what we do. It's something else that people care about, and yesterday was really good television. Ben Raby on the Capitals at 1. They prepare for the Canes. They're in Carolina today. First game on the road this postseason. They're up 2-0 in the first round of these Stanley Cup playoffs. Next, your chance to win tickets to the Nats and the Giants on Wednesday. You got to be listening in moments when we return on The Fan. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. If you know how many home runs Anthony Rendon has, And you're the 10th caller right now at 800-636-1067. You're going to see the Nats take on the San Francisco Giants April 17th at Nats Park. 106.7 The Fan and PenFed Credit Union are taking you out to the ballgame all season long, courtesy of PenFed Credit Union. Details available at thefandc.com/contests. 1 hour from now at 1:45, we'll be giving away tickets and entry into the Redskins draft party at Anthem, which is going to be really cool during the first round when they're on the clock at number 15 for next Thursday night.
It's next Thursday, by the way. Didn't it feel so far away for so long, and now it's very close? I have no feel for what they're going to do. No feel.
It's going to be, I think, crystallize and materialize a little bit more clearly like a Polaroid as we get closer. As of right now, there's still a lot of possibilities, but things have to clear up in front of them. One major possibility is the wide receiver position, which brings me to something you and I wanted to discuss, which is a story on SI.com by Connor Orr, talented writer, who ranked all 32 wide receiver groups in the NFL from first to last. He actually went through and also deciphered the amount of money owed to the position this year as it pertains to the overall money allocated to the position big picture. So as an example, he listed the Cleveland Browns as the number one wide receiver group in the NFL.
Now that Odell Beckham is there, right?
He's got Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, Rashard Higgins, who I think super talented, and Antonio Callaway, who's a burner who can make plays down the field. This year, they've got basically $36 million they just spent at wide receiver to bring their overall money allocated number to $202 million at the wide receiver position. So it kind of goes through all of the numbers in every single group in the league.
Which I think is a really helpful exercise, way to do it, right?
Absolutely. Browns number one, Falcons with Julio Jones, Mo Sanu, Calvin Ridley, Justin Hardy number two. He's got the Vikings, who just re-upped with Adam Thielen, have Diggs under contract third. Laquan Treadwell's their three. Chad Beebe's their four. I think they lost Aldrick Robinson this offseason. The Texans are the number four wide receiver group. This one's really good if they could ever stay healthy.
Yeah, that's the Fuller corollary, right? If Fuller's available, that's a dynamic group.
Ridiculously vertical threat in Will Fuller, but Kiki Cooties can play. Vincent Smith and DeAndre Hopkins. Vincent Smith, I think, probably one of the better-kept secrets on the high part of this list. The Saints are in the top five. I think Breeze makes these guys better because you got Michael Thomas, who's a superstar with Cam Meredith, Ted Ginn, and Traquan Smith. That's kind of a Michael Thomas and the Misfits type.
Sure. Traquan Smith still open against the Redskins, but the rest of those guys are just guys. Michael Thomas, baller.
Rams at number six with Cooks, Woods, Kupp, and Reynolds. The Chiefs at number seven with overpaid Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill, who may or may not be in trouble, DeMarcus Robinson, and Sammy Coates. So you could go through the rest of the top 10 at your own leisure, but I want to skip all the way down to the bottom of this list.
You got
to
scan down a bunch.
To find the Redskins, who rank 31 in the NFL. 31 in the National Football League. They list Paul Richardson, Josh Doctson, Trey McBride, and Brian Quick. I'm guessing, like you said earlier, they actually meant Trey Quinn there, not Trey McBride, who's also on their roster. Or maybe they just thought maybe Trey McBride is going to be important to them.
Maybe they're predicting something. I don't know.
The 31st team, the Redskins. Here's what they wrote. Washington is in a strange spot. We're drafting both receiver and quarterback atop the draft. Makes a lot of sense. That is a strange spot. It's also a terrible spot to be in. Richardson, super disappointing last year, Danny. Hurt most of the season. To me, feels like just a speed guy that isn't a complete wideout big enough to go across the middle and make catches. Josh Doctson's played 3 years since being drafted in the first round. Hadn't been good enough. Quinn got hurt a lot as a rookie and was the last pick in the draft. And Brian Quick, there's 800 of those dudes wandering around the planet right now.
They've cut and re-signed him seven times.
He's just a guy. That's a bad position group.
It's disastrous. And to me, there needed to be more desperation to fix it. I don't know what they could have done because their wide receiver free agency crop wasn't particularly good. But this, to me, is an emergency. I'm not saying you've got to be one or two because Cleveland's spending $36 million of their cap space on the receiver spot. You don't have to do that. You could be like, I don't know, the Buccaneers and spend $27 million. You got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Or you could be like the Chargers who spent $27 million with Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Travis Benjamin. An upgrade's needed. An upgrade is massively needed. Now, last year was the perfect storm of quarterback that's not going to throw to wide receivers and wide receivers that aren't any good to get you the offense where every inch was schemed up and every check down was their best bet. They need to have the easy button. They need to add something where you have a game breaker. You need something besides this group. And if you're counting on Trey Quinn to do that, that's a major leap from basically played in a handful of games and caught a touchdown that time in Dallas to 75, 80 catch receiver. There's a large gap there.
I don't think they're counting on Quinn to do that. What they're counting on Trey Quinn to do is be a serviceable, consistent underneath option in the way that Jamison Crowder was. You run my bubbles and my smokes out of the slot. You run a lot of my drags and my crossers and stuff at the middle of the field, 3 and 4 yards from the line of scrimmage on 2nd and 10 to make it a more manageable third down, down in distance. I think that's what they want from Trey Quinn. When the ball's in your hands, catch it. That's what he did in college at SMU when he caught 113 passes to lead the nation. That's what he did in training camp and in the preseason and in a very limited capacity in the regular year when he caught 9 balls and a touchdown. Showed nicely against Dallas. To me, there are two keys here. One is Josh Doctson. I'm kind of over Josh Doctson becoming more with Washington than he has been. I don't think they know how to call plays for him. Santana Moss, who I talk to about this all the time, has made this apparent to me. We should get him on the show to discuss this. I don't think they have a quarterback, unless Colt McCoy is their starter, who's going to allow him to impact games. Alex Smith was bad at it. Kirk Cousins was not nearly as bad at it as Alex Smith, but wasn't particularly good at it, had to get better at it as time went on, and he was just never going to be a 50-50 thrower. Redskins fans hated that about Cousins. They went even further to the extreme.
Remember, when they hated the interceptions, and then they hated that he wouldn't throw 50-50 balls.
But he threw some of those jump balls against, like, look back at the New Orleans Saints game where Doctson would outleap people.
Smith
wouldn't even make those throws. Seattle to win the game down along the goal line, which was kind of a desperation throw. But Smith in a million years wouldn't have tried that. Colt McCoy would. So if Colt McCoy is your starting quarterback, go back to the Dallas game when he was actually on the field, Doctson had his best game of the season. I think Josh Doctson probably would catch 75, 80 balls over the course of a season. You're going to lose a lot of games. You're going to turn the ball over. You're going to throw 20 picks. You might also have 24 passing touchdowns, and Doctson might put up some numbers. But the other guy's Richardson. Richardson was a 16-yard per catch, 700-yard wideout as a guy who wasn't at the top of the depth chart or close to it in Seattle. He was a big play threat. He was an assassin down the field. He provided a vertical possibility in Seattle with the Seahawks. Again, he was not a great Smith with Alex fit with Alex Smith. Smith's one long touchdown to him was a terribly underthrown, awful pass that he fell down catching, and he still was able to get up and score against the Green Bay Packers.
Remember when he missed him in a different? I can't remember which game it was.
I think it was the Giants game on the road.
But it was like 20. But the one he missed where he was open, he threw it 25 yards like east and
I think
a little
it was
bit south
at the Giants.
Was it at Giants? Oh,
it was actually so terribly thrown that there was a safety at the goal line, like just waiting in center field, and they were running toward Paul Richardson because he was so open that the throw landed right where they were standing. If it was probably Landon Collins, if he would have stayed there.
Just horrendous.
I mean, it was unbelievable. But if Paul Richardson makes a big step forward as a sophomore with the Skins in his second year, then the group gets a lot better. I just don't know how confident I am about that.
To me, I say it even more simply. Trey Quinn's an unknown. That's your best upside guy. Doctson is who he is, which is a guy that will win an occasional jump ball. There's nothing special about this group. Even Richardson's speed is nice. He was the best that they had, but they only really had him for 4 healthy games before, you know, he succumbed to injury, which is what he's always done.
Who is a weapon? Who is a guy on a Sunday at 1 o'clock, the game's about to start, that you say, this guy's going to go catch 8 balls for 115 yards?
They don't have that.
Doctson's never gone for 100 yards. Richardson, last year with the Redskins, was, for the most part, going to give you 2 catches for 30 yards. Trey Quinn was Mr. Irrelevant. Brian Quick might get 100 yards if you string together the last couple seasons.
At best, right?
I don't know how they could possibly get out of this draft, which starts on Thursday next week, and not in the first 2 rounds add a wide receiver.
They just have to. They have to add talent at that spot.
Ben Raby, pre- and post-host for the Capitals on the radio network you hear on 106.7 The Fan so regularly, will be with us next, top of the hour at 1, to break down tonight's game with the Canes.
It's Window Nation's annual spring cleaning sales event, guys. Are your windows having issues, cracks, hard to open, unusual moisture? Or are you just window shopping? If so, call Window Nation today, and schedule a free in-home estimate. It's free. Window Nation is going to save you 33% off your entire purchase, window, siding, and doors. Get upfront pricing and no hidden terms. Again, it's just 33% off every style of window, house of siding, and all doors, including labor.
Plus, for the next 2 weeks, save even more with 0% interest for 5 full years on your entire purchase. That's 0% interest until 2024. Get a jump on your spring cleanup and call Window Nation, where every window is installed by factory-trained professionals and guaranteed to be done right the first time. It was at my house. It was at Danny's house. Every window is backed by a company with an A-plus Better Business Bureau ranking and over 10,000 positive online reviews.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.